Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. It's the Roguecast for Wednesday, September 9th. And as we record this, we are preparing to go to Reading with Rogues tonight to talk about Lazarus.
Yes.
So we won't promote that this time, but we'll promote next month.
Super good Cuban food.
Yes, indeed.
I'm ready.
So this week, if you're listening to this on a Wednesday, you still have time to go to Ladies Night on September 9th at Palermo Pasta House.
Yes.
And then later this month, September 26th, we'll have Batman Day, which will be a variety. This is DC's big event thing they do, and they didn't provide a ton of support for us this year.
Right.
So we're sort of making up as much as we can, but we will have 15% off on Batman-related merchandise of all kinds. You know, statues, figures, comics, whatever else. And any Batman purchase gets you, while supplies last, a free Batman comic and a free Batman mask.
Yes.
So that'll be kind of cool. And we've heard rumors that someone might fire at the bat signal, but we can't confirm.
Right. We're hoping to get the signal up and running.
It is possible that Batman might drop by, but we can't confirm. Then that Sunday, September 27th, is the Magic the Gathering Battle for Zendikar pre-release. And then going back a little bit, Monday, September 21st, is our Gaming with Rogues at Kirby Lane.
Right.
That's going to be Dixit this month. And again, if you have a Rogue card, you get 10% off on the game for the month.
Sounds right.
So you can buy Dixit for 10% off.
Yep. Rogue card's been doing very well.
It has. And that's all the info on that is on the website. But basically, $35 a year gets you the Rogue card, which gives you a bunch of extra discounts on Reading with Rogues, Gaming with Rogues, our Picks of the Week, access to some special parties, some gaming sessions, access to our board game lending library.
Which we've had somebody take advantage of recently, and I was happy to see that.
Yeah, we've expanded a little bit. We added a few things like the Street Fighter deck building game that we've talked about, Formula D, which I believe we've talked about, Settlers of Catan is in there. There's a pretty good stack of games that people could come and borrow and try out. So if you have a Rogue card, you should come try out the board game lending library. If you don't have a Rogue card, you should get a Rogue card, and then you can try the lending library.
Exactly.
And then we've already picked our Reading with Rogue selection for next month. We're ahead of the game for once, even though we changed it last minute. You guys didn't even know about that, though I just told you.
Behind the scenes politics.
Yeah. But we're going to do for Halloween Revival, the Image comic about the dead coming back to life in the town of Wasilia. Isn't it Wasilla? No, it's not Wasilla. I don't remember. I can never remember the name.
It's like I can't remember the state.
It's not Colorado. No.
Nebraska?
Maybe Nebraska? I can never remember. It's somewhere in the Midwest.
Yes, it's Midwest.
And people are coming back to life. Not as zombies, just as people back alive.
It is billed as a rural noir.
Yes.
And it is largely sort of a ensemble suspense and drama series with horror elements.
I was going to say, it's spooky.
It does have spooky,
but it's not horror like there's always like a slasher behind every corner and all that stuff.
No, it's
way to spoil it, Dave.
It's mystery and character driven. It's very Losty.
Yeah.
And we're doing the same thing we did for Lazarus, which is that you can buy either the first trade or the first and second trades, or, which we recommend, the hardcover, which has the first two trades in it and extra stuff.
And because it's got such beautiful art, that oversized hardcover makes it look especially nice.
Yeah, it does. All right, so on to the other news. There's a bit more this week than there's been of late. First, I want to talk about a couple of Kickstarters we're following, and we have links to those in our show notes. I signed up for The Network, which is a board game about building your network lineup. So you've got stars and genres and time slots, and their cards representing all this stuff. And you try to each build the strongest lineup for your network.
Oh, that's actually pretty cool.
It sounds like a lot of fun. The production values look good.
Does the game you get X number of points for this star and this concept? It's not like it's decided on by the players, I
think. No. What do you mean? No, the players have a budget, and then each player is a network.
Right. But, that is to say, the game says this is a five-star script or pitch or whatever.
Right.
And that's what gets you your points, I assume, things like actor.
I think, it probably costs more. I think it's advertising dollars you're going for is probably the goal. I haven't looked that closely at it, but I'm guessing it's sort of like you can spend all your money on the big star, but then you don't get a good script or you've only got so many time slots to put shows in. Where do you put things? That kind of thing.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, I'm curious how it's all going to work, and it looks well put together. The other Kickstarter is much more long-awaited, And that is Battle Chasers.
And we talked about this a little ways back.
When it was the first
announced. When it was announced.
But I didn't think it was actually going to happen.
The Kickstarter went live today.
Mm-hmm.
Our customer Matt Frank, who I think a fan of the series in general, he posted it. And I went ahead and watched the video this morning, and it looks good. They've got they showed both interstitial animation that they're going to have in there for like some of the little story scenes,
mm-hmm.
As well as like lots of in-game scenes where you know it's styled on the JRPGs, the Japanese RPGs
right.
from the tradition of like I'd say more like the early Final Fantasies, like up through Final Fantasy VI, where you have these really elaborate, in this case, hand-drawn backgrounds.
Oh, nice.
But, you know, the traditional build a party, get equipment, go down in dungeons, fight monsters, that kind of stuff. They seemed to indicate that there was going to be kind of a, like, a steep challenge level.
Okay.
Which I thought was interesting. Maybe that may be one of the things that sort of sets it apart.
So this is, I thought it was going to be the book, not the video game.
Well, I think that is kind of like, there's going to be some kind of follow-up in conjunction with.
Okay.
But,
because they need to put it all in print.
His focus is always on the video games these days.
Just put out the trade of the battle chasers that you have. That's all. We can sell that.
I'm sure that'll happen in conjunction
yeah.
with it. They're looking to raise $500,000.
Yeah, it'll
and
probably make
this
more.
This morning, they're already at $75,000, like, at, like, 9 in the morning.
Yeah, you can usually tell when Kickstarter is funded, like, within the first couple days.
It's going to do just fine. But I know that, and I'm sure we have some interested parties, people who read the comic, or who just like his art style,
yeah.
or who just like Japanese RPGs. So, you know, I didn't see enough to say, like, this looks amazing, but it looks good.
Right.
And I, you know, I have a fondness for it, too. So definitely go check out their site.
All right. One bit of big movie news that has been – we actually sort of broke last week. We didn't really discuss it. But the Marvel Studios things. There have been rumors flying around. It's been more or less confirmed. I want to wait until we had some confirmation of what actually happened. But I don't know how many people know these names. But Ike Perlmutter – who is the sort of 70-something billionaire who's been in charge of Marvel for a while, during its down period as well. Like, he came in during the 90s and was one of the guys who sort of financially rescued it. But he's always been sort of this conservative money man.
Right.
I think has sort of a reputation as a guy who's tried to pinch pennies. I can remember the famous – there was a story about him, like, not paying for lunch at a meeting or something like that. Like, really penny pinching.
Yeah.
Yeah, there have been some crazy things too.
So he is over at Marvel Entertainment. He's the head of Marvel Entertainment, the corporation.
Okay.
And Kevin Feige, who is in his 40s, he's sort of our age, and he is the guy who's basically the super producer over all the Marvel movies.
Right.
He's the guy who
seems like he has gotten a lot of credit for what they've done. Right.
He's the guy who sort of built the shared universe, that kind of thing. And then there's what they call the Marvel Creative Committee. The official Marvel Creative Committee is Alan Fine, from Disney, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel's Chief Executive Officer, Joe Quesada, and I forget who's the other guy. Dan Buckley, publisher Dan Buckley.
Yeah.
Those three are the official Creative Committee, and then there's sort of the unofficial one that also includes Brian Michael Bendis.
Right.
And maybe Jeff Loeb, although Jeff Loeb's officially in charge of TV. So what happened is there were all these rumors, and it's been more or less confirmed that Kevin Feige was possibly getting ready to leave Marvel over Captain America: Civil War. Captain America: Civil War is essentially Avengers 2.5.
I think his vision is pretty grand, and it matches what the story needs to be.
Yeah.
They were trying to give him budget cuts.
Perlmutter was trying to cut it down and make it a smaller story and cut characters out and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Feige was not having it. And
it seems weird that at this point Feige would be shut down on anything.
Well, he wasn't. What happened is he went to Disney, and now he's reporting. Perlmutter's out of the loop with him. Marvel Studios now reports directly to Alan Horn, the CEO of Disney.
Uh-huh.
So there is no – Kevin Feige has moved up, basically.
I don't know if we discussed it last week or not, but there were the stories, you know, saying that Age of Ultron was a failure that was being used in
– That rumor's been going around, and I think it's Hollywood talk. I mean, nobody wants to admit their movie was successful because then you got to pay everybody who worked on it. So that's Hollywood.
Well, yeah.
But it made $1 billion. So – if you make $1 billion and your movie's a failure, then you're doing something wrong.
But I kind of wonder if, like, that was Perlmutter sort of, you know, using that against Feige.
It might have been.
And been like, no, look what everyone's saying.
That might have been his attempt. I mean, the critical reaction was mixed, and despite the fact how much money it made, it did cost a huge amount of money.
It did, yeah.
But, yeah,
and
clearly...
If Civil War is essentially Avengers 2.0, I'm sure it costs a huge amount of money.
Yeah, it does. And that's...
Well, I mean, the cast kind of makes it an Avengers movie.
Yeah,
what can then what can you expect from the Avengers Infinity, which
it's going to be even more so, yeah. So I think this was a good fight to have now.
Yeah.
And I'm glad the way it went.
Well, if Civil War comes off...
Yes.
Then Infinity will probably get what it needs.
Yeah.
And it may be, like, the biggest budget of any movie in the history of ever.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Disney is... this is just good for fans. And
yeah.
I think Feige is the perfect person to be in charge of this, and he's directly reporting to Disney is great.
Yeah. The other interesting thing, the thing of note I saw in a Comics Alliance article, apparently stories have it that Perlmutter is the reason – remember all those embarrassing stories about Black Widow just like maliciously omitted from merchandise and
taking – like the toys?
The toys that had like the motorcycle scene that replaced her with Cap.
Yeah.
Like she's not in – she's not – I noticed the backpack at Target. She's not on the backpacks.
She wasn't on the DVD.
She's not on anything. They went out of their way to take her out. Like, they're trying to market so hard to boys.
Yeah.
And they also have been really slow to put a woman or a person of color as their lead character. Rumor has it, or stories have it, that Perlmutter is the guy responsible for that. That he was the guy who didn't believe that there was any need to be more diverse and that kind of thing.
And again, I've only read the articles that are sort of speculating that he was using things like Elektra and other things and other movies like that, Catwoman, sort of as sort of his basis for these arguments.
We've seen that in those arguments used in the comics industry before, like in the last 10, 15 years. I've seen lots of times when it seems like, you know, growth for female creators and female characters was kind of downplayed because it's like, well, this flopped or that flopped. But in both the Marvel movies and in the comics, that's proven to be false.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And in toys. We were talking about this the other day.
That's true.
Our staffer Amanda is trying to find more female action figures, and we're talking about how hard it used to be because they were the short pack, because the conventional wisdom was female action figures don't sell. And the reason they don't sell is because you don't make them.
No, I mean, they made, like, one or two for every, like, three or four series that they made.
And they were always sought after because there weren't that many.
But now we're seeing more and more female characters, both on screen, in the, you know, toys and everything. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. I think that the smartest thing Feige could do now is to move forward on Captain Marvel, Black Panther, that kind of thing, and try to diversify the Marvel Universe a little bit, just as they've done in the comics, to sort of put a stamp on it that... We are not going to be these guys. You don't have to be embarrassed about us. You don't have to say, you don't have to worry that we're going to be the guys not putting Black Widow in things.
Right.
Well, I think they've actually changed up the packaging for Age of Ultron that includes Black Widow.
Oh, that's good. If they corrected that, that's good.
And correct me if I'm wrong, is Feige involved in the Netflix stuff at all?
Yes, but not heavily.
Okay.
That is Jeff Loeb's. And actually, Perlmutter and those guys are still all over the TV stuff. Mm. Yeah.
I was going to say, if he's like, he's a big money guy behind them, like producer.
Yeah.
How do you, if he doesn't get his way, how do they say no to him? Who?
They can't. Disney CEO could.
Right. But like, how do they cut him out of the loop?
Oh,
I'm just wondering, how does it occur?
I'm sure that he's outranked by the CEO. He's outranked by Disney CEO.
Yeah.
He's only the head of Marvel. So Feige went over his head to his boss, basically, and said, look, I'm going to quit or I report to you.
And the guy was like, don't quit.
Yeah. The guy was like, don't quit. Yeah. That seems to be what happened. And it's probably, you know, there's all kinds of things going on. We don't know the whole story, but from what it looks like from the outside, that is probably what happened.
It seems like well, go ahead.
Sir. No, I was going to say he probably recognized that Feige was super important to what
to what they're doing. Yeah.
If they were to lose him at this point, it could be a huge loss of confidence in the fandom.
Yep. And then all that has to happen is the next movie without him goes off and is bad.
Yeah.
And it would be the narrative would be that Marvel had lost it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was a smart move on everybody's part, except for me, Perlmutter, who should have been fighting in the first place.
Right.
all right. So turning to the small screen, TV, there is some Marvel casting news in that Simone Missick, who's an actor I don't necessarily know, has been cast as Misty Knight for Luke Cage.
Yep. She looks good for the part.
Yep.
I don't know who she is.
I don't either. Just that Misty Knight is going to be in it makes me happy.
Right, right. And I think that's kind of most of the giddiness I've seen is like, holy crap,
Misty Knight. They're doing Misty Knight. Now we just need Colleen Wing, Lady Samurai.
Yep. I would not be shocked.
Yeah. Yep, I think it's possible. I was trying to explain this to my TV podcast, and they were like, who's Misty Knight? And I was like, she's a cop. Her arm got blown off by a bomb. then she got a bionic arm. And Grant, one of the other fellow TV dudes, was like, wait, is that a thing that happens? I'm like, in the Marvel Universe it is. You can just get a bionic arm. It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
You know.
I've got the big question to roll out here.
Yeah.
Is she going to have the afro or not?
I'm almost certain. Because they've played up the afro in the comics.
They have. They have. I just wondered, is it going to be downsized?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, the actress has a hairstyle that's more of a sort of a frizzy hairstyle and not a straight up afro.
Right.
And they may go that route.
I'm trying to think, like, who's it most based on? Like, is it like Foxy Brown?
It's Foxy Brown, all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So sort of a Pam Grier look.
Yeah, absolutely.
The 70s. Yeah.
Now, comics in the 70s and comics now. Comics always steal from other pop culture, and she was she was their Pam Grier.
Right. Yeah. Well, because I cannot think of a lot of characters that look, I hope she's got it.
Yeah.
I wonder if we'll see her in Jessica Jones.
I don't know. I don't think so, because they cast her for Luke Cage. They didn't say anything about her being in Jessica Jones.
But she's supposed to be a cop, right?
Yeah.
That's a character you can get in any show.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know, I mean, Luke Cage is going to be in Jessica Jones and a few other people I've heard.
I think what's going on is
they sneak her in and, you know, it's not on the record.
I think what's going on now is that Jessica Jones is done.
Yeah.
I think Jessica Jones has been filmed, and what we're seeing now is they're doing pre-production on Cage. That's why all the news is coming out as it is. I mean, I don't have all the news, but they've cast several different villains.
Is Alfred Woodard? No.
Alfred Woodard is in there.
Yeah, she's in there.
As a character who everybody was guessing was Black Mariah, but that's not the case.
Yeah.
They cast the dude from House of Cards, the guy who plays Remy in House of Cards, as Cottonmouth. Not the Captain America villain, that'd be extremely weird, but just a sort of street hustler who was one of his villains. They've cast a guy as Shades, remember Shades in Comanche?
Yeah.
They've cast a guy as Shades.
Nice.
From a guy from True Blood or Sons of Anarchy, I think. Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, Luke Cage villains are not super well known.
No, but they're building up, and the cast looks good, so we're in for another. I'm hoping that Alias, or a.k.a. Jessica Jones, is as good as Daredevil was.
And then we need Iron Fist.
And then they need to get
then
Iron
they
Fist.
They need to start on Iron Fist.
I think they're probably still working on developing it, but they got to be thinking about it at this point.
Just go crazy. Just go full on martial arts.
Go crazy martial arts and powers, yep.
Randy, you mentioned Cottonmouth. Whenever they get on, once the Marvel's done with all their current wave of stuff and the Civil War's over for Cap, I want the fourth Cap movie to be Serpent Society.
Ugh. I'd watch the hell out of that.
Because, you know, that would just be a cool, like, international hit squad kind of movie.
Yep.
They'd have to come down a little bit from the bigness of what they've
done.
And I feel like Serpent Society is a good, it would be a good one for that.
You know, they had Batroc in Winter Soldier, and while it was just a bit part, it was a good version of him.
Yeah,
if they just did him like that, if they were the pre-credits, essentially.
I don't know. You want, the central villains.
I don't think they're going to be the central villains.
They were big in the 90s.
I don't see it. I don't see it. I'd love it, but I don't see it.
Who would you put as central?
I don't know. I'm thinking they're going to have to do AIM at some point.
They're not done AIM?
They hinted at it in Iron Man a little bit.
Yeah.
But I guess MODOK and AIM has to be in Iron Man.
Well, I'm saying like the Serpent Society could be like a superpowered hit squad that is like the, you know, the hit squad for AIM or something
right.
like that.
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm just saying.
I'm curious. I don't know. We don't know. But that does bring up one little thing I didn't put on my initial news, but that Chris Evans did say, hey, if Marvel wants to extend my contract, I'm interested.
Yeah.
The narrative has always been that Chris Evans wanted out.
Yeah, because he wanted to focus on directing.
And I don't think that's the case.
No, I think he's changed his mind.
Well, he probably was like, hey, look how much money this makes.
And also, look, how much fun am I having?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Also in TV, there is the S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3 trailer.
Yep.
Age of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's 30 seconds. There's not much to it.
Yeah, there really isn't.
But they're clearly doing the Secret Warrior stuff, and they're...
I really would have done the trailer a little bit differently.
Yeah.
If they're going to play up the Secret Warriors, I would really play up, like, do what they
did. I'd like to have seen
Secret
some
Wars.
Of them. Yeah.
So, if you're going to do all those characters as Inhumans, really just do a quick focus on those characters.
Give them the powers.
And getting the powers, showing them being cool.
Yeah.
And instead, it's sort of just this kind of quick flashes of Daisy and a few other like Coulson.
I mean,
like,
honestly, half of it is footage from last season.
Yeah, and
hey, you know how I watched something earlier that I thought was that 30 second trailer was not. Was it, so just to confirm, there was some scene they showed where somebody caused like an avalanche.
Yeah,
is that in the
that was in the season, season
yeah,
two?
Yeah,
just confirming.
Season.
Yeah,
yeah, it was Quake with her.
Yeah,
powers.
How have they been? Just out of curiosity, special effects wise, with all those powers.
Weak.
Randy says weak. I think they're better than in some shows.
I mean, is it like comparable to Heroes or Smallville?
It's comparable to Smallville more than Heroes.
I don't know. I think it's probably comparable to Heroes.
I don't know. I look at their special effects and I think this is stuff that would have looked a little weak in the 90s. Mm. We've gotten better than this.
Maybe.
It looks low budget
to
me.
Action scenes are pretty good. They're
every now and then they'll deliver one that's really good, but a lot of the times I feel like they're not living up. So I'm not super enthused for S.H.I.E.L.D. to come back. My daughter really liked it, so I'm sure I'll be watching it.
I mean, I think there's always room for improvement on the show, but I've liked what I've seen, and
I think we're going to get a bigger trailer. We're going to get a bigger one at some point, right?
I mean, it's coming on in like 3 weeks. We should have a trailer by now.
When is Arrow starting?
So Arrow is season 4 starts October 7th, I believe. It's first week of October.
Just a few weeks out.
Yeah, it's a little further out than S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
But we have a trailer for that, season 4 of Arrow, which introduces the new costume. It shows Mr. Terrific not in costume, but in the lab with Felicity.
Right.
Shows Constantine.
Right, just a glimpse of him.
Has the renamed Star City.
Right.
With a billboard saying, in memory of Ray Palmer, because if you guys remember the end of... Of Arrow, Dave doesn't because he hasn't seen it, but that...
And it looks like he dies?
It looks like he gets blown up, but in fact he's been shrunk down.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So he'll be back. Looks like Ali and Felicity may have retired to Coast City for a while.
I caught that from it,
And then...
There's lots of Felicity stuff, which looks fun.
She always gets great lines.
They have to come back because Damian Dark.
Yep.
Who is played by... what's his name?
The guy from
Justified, and I love that actor, Neil McDonough. And I love that actor. I'm curious to see what he does. So
on the goofy side,
it's Dum Dum, right?
Yeah, it's Dum Dum.
Yeah. On the goofy side, we have his name, Damian Dark.
Yep.
A bit silly.
Yep.
He also, just the quick vibe I got, seemed a lot like, who's the bad guy in season one?
Malcolm Merlyn?
And I guess later.
Yeah.
He seemed rather Malcolm-ish, and he's like, I've got plans for this town, or something.
Yeah.
And I was I just kind of like, well, he could run up against Arrow with plans that don't involve taking over the town.
They always do. I mean, it's all going to be based. They want to keep it in Star City.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm just saying, he could be working on building some kind of weather control device in Star City.
Well, I mean, the notion is that Damian Dark ran up against Ra's al Ghul. I mean, they were sort of...
Has he appeared before?
He was mentioned.
Okay. And they were rivals.
Okay.
So,
and we'll see what his big plan is.
He's meant to be, like, just evil incarnate.
Yeah.
And while that is taking a little bit far, Neil McDonough will have a lot of fun with it.
I'm sure
he'll
be
a great villain.
My only gripe about the trailer is we've been hearing over and over again how they're taking a page from The Flash. That they learned from how everything The Flash did right and everything Arrow did wrong in season 3 that they were going to maybe a little bit lighter tone, a little bit more obvious superpowers and that kind of thing. And it still feels a little bit like Dark Arrow to me.
Although the trailer seemed very energetic to me.
Yeah, it was energetic, though.
But I would say, I didn't quite get the Flash vibe, but partially that's because there's not as many superpowered villains that goes up against.
Yeah.
I'm
hopeful. I would like them to recover from what was sort of a weak season 3.
The other notable thing, and this is, I saw a lot of fan backlash against the stills of the costume.
Oh, Diggle's costume.
Diggle did not look great. It looks like sort of a black costume version of like sort of like Magneto from the X-Men movies.
Yeah.
He's got like the helmet and like a cloak or a coat.
Yeah.
I thought it looked a little bit better in motion, but you know.
Well,
I can't quite tell.
I mean, it looks like he's meant to be the Guardian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Guardian is like a blue and gold. I mean, that's a whole different look. I kept thinking Crime Buster from the Superman comics. Crime Buster, though, had an actual like good costume that would have been a good you could convert right over.
Code name? It's not just possible he's just Diggle wearing armor now because he's doing.
They're probably going to give him some kind of code name. Maybe it's just an operational code name because they can't just keep calling him Diggle.
Yeah.
Speedy's got Speedy.
Yeah.
Actually, I did like seeing her out operating in the costume.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Have you seen that before?
That was at the end of season 3.
It looked cool.
And I thought Laurel looked good.
One of the things that made it look very superhero-y was there were several shots of like the whole team arrayed. And it was like him, Diggle in costume, Speedy. And so it had a cool superhero vibe.
I mean, as much as I felt that season 3 had issues, I still like that cast.
Oh, I do too.
And I think they've got a lot of energy together, whether or not all of them are great actors, because I don't think all of them are.
I think all of them are doing fine for what they're supposed to be
exactly.
doing.
Exactly. And I think they have a lot of fun with it, and that is conveyed through the screen. So that's more or less where I'm looking forward to getting back to those people.
Yeah. I'm excited to see it.
It's not on the level of excitement that I have, say, for The Flash.
No, where's our Flash trailer?
Dear God, I don't even know if I want to see a Flash trailer.
I do. I'm ready. I know enough. They're not going to give away anything we don't already know. We know a lot about what's coming up.
We know a ton.
So I would really like one big trailer to get me ready. I'm pumped for Flash to come back. All right. Other TV news. There was a story floating around that Patrick Warburton, the Tick, the live action Tick that they did, that Amazon is going to do a new pilot for that.
Yeah.
And here's one of the issues with that.
Confirmed story.
That story was from like 2012.
Oh yeah.
However, then a new story went around saying, "Oh yeah, no, the 2012 thing didn't happen, but now we're in talks again."
Right.
So it looks like it may happen.
Would they get Mr. Carbonell back?
Maybe.
You need Batman.
Yeah. Yeah, I would hope they would get Nestor Carbonell's only doing like Once Upon a Time, right? I mean, surely he's free.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
so,
sure.
Yeah, I would love this to happen. Patrick Warburton seems on board with the idea. He apparently really liked doing it.
Yeah. I mean, it could be kind of goofy fun. I never watched it, so I don't know.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It's not as good as the cartoon.
I was going to say, not as good as the cartoon, but it's a lot of fun.
Is it on Netflix?
It was on Netflix, but I believe it's not anymore, probably because of the Amazon deal.
But is it on Amazon Prime?
Maybe. I don't think it is right now.
Okay.
But I'm not sure. I can't say for 100% sure. All right. Diverting over to talk about, of all things, comic books.
We have to. Okay. Yeah.
They have revealed officially the identity of the Totally Awesome Hulk.
Oh, right.
No, it's not a surprise at all.
Surprising no one. This was pretty much what we had guessed from our previews and guesswork.
That hair, dear God.
Is Amadeus Cho.
Amadeus Cho is the Hulk. You know what's interesting about this? That's a Pac created the character, and he's writing him.
Right.
But it makes Hulk Asian.
Yes, true.
There, it is another increase of diversity in Marvel. And also, Frank Cho is doing the art, and Frank Cho is one of the few Asian artists in comics.
Right.
So it's a diversity across the board, which is kind of cool.
So all Cho on Cho action.
All Cho on Cho action. But more importantly, Amadeus Cho is a great character.
He is.
And the notion of him being the Hulk is really going to be fun.
I think so, too.
We have no idea how that's going to happen.
Nope.
And honestly, I don't know if we're going to get it right out of the gate either.
Could be a mystery
because it's going to be 8 months.
Right,
after
we know that.
Fact.
Yeah, all the Secret War, post-Secret War relaunches are set 8 months in advance.
That's a good thing to do.
I do too. You got an 8 month gap between the end of Secret Wars, right, which won't happen for two more months after the launch. You might as well leave an 8 month gap because you won't even know what happens at the end of Secret War till December or January.
But we're not that far out from these relaunches.
No, they're soon. They're
like a month.
I have wondered if they knew that they were likely to be delayed.
I think it's possible.
But this will allow all their relaunch stories to begin in media res. The characters are going to be going, and presumably, you know, over the next first few months of it, they'll flash back and reveal however it is he became the Hulk specifically.
And I honestly just have a lot of faith in Greg Pak. He's a really good storyteller.
He had the best run on Hulk probably since Peter David's heyday.
Yeah.
He did
lots of good stuff.
He is very high in my heart because he wrote the best version of Hercules.
And yeah,
he did. Yes. Yep.
And that had Amadeus Cho in it.
Yep.
Yep.
And a pretty good little Scorpion miniseries, too.
Yeah. I forgot that she was in. Yeah.
That's right.
It's his other created character.
Yeah, that character vanished.
They haven't done anything with their.
He needs to bring her back.
Wait a minute, that wasn't Pac, that was Van Lente.
Was that
Fred Van Lente created the new Scorpion?
Oh.
Pac may have used the character, but Fred Van Lente created her and wrote the first stories and wrote the backups.
Oh, okay. Right.
Van Lente and Pac have worked together quite a bit.
Maybe it was because backups introduced Amadeus Cho, too, right?
Yes.
Was that a thing that they were kind of recurring?
You're conflating them because they were in the same sort of anthology book. Yeah.
I just missed that character. She's a good character.
It's too bad that character's not around. I like that character. She'd fit right in with the new, you know, Silk and all those characters, too.
Yeah.
Well, I expect we'll see her.
Finally, in comics news, the next series, Marvel's a rotating series of Star Wars books. In addition to the main ones, they've got a solo book that was started as Princess Leia. Right now it's Lando. When Lando finishes, they're doing Chewbacca. When Chewbacca finishes, C-3PO. C-3PO solo story. Here's the interesting thing.
It's going to be the prissiest series of all time.
I've seen a lot of people making the joke like, well, you've got Star Wars' only gay character. Don't mess it up.
Do you know who the creative team is?
It is James Robinson and Tony Harris of 90s Starman.
How bizarre.
That is really weird.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can exactly give depth to C-3PO.
Yeah.
I would probably almost tend to use him as like a... key player, but have like a notable ensemble in it.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case.
But it sounds like fun.
Yeah, sure, why not?
He's been around for everything.
Yep. Which is a little ridiculous.
It is a little ridiculous,
That was one of those Lucasisms that was kind of dopey.
But you kind of have to accept now.
Yep, it's part of the deal.
Yeah, whatever.
All right. That wraps up our news for the week. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for the week. We'll be right back. We're talking comics for Wednesday, September 9th, and this is a weird month, fellas, because it's a five-week month.
Right.
Which means that all the shipping stuff is a little weird, and we don't get our traditional really great first week of comics that is always sort of the thing. So this is second week, but it's a really good week.
I agree. There were some resolutions of some books. Some Secret Wars stuff is wrapping up, or about to wrap up.
Yep.
And I think... what was going to be my cheater pick, maybe your pick, Randy, and it's a wrap-up.
Yeah. So we'll be talking – what we noticed, especially Nick and I noticed, was that there's not a lot of jumping on points we talk about this week. We talk about stuff you guys have heard us talk about before. Yeah. But it's all stuff that maybe it was the wrap-up or, you know, and that kind of thing. And it's all stuff we really like.
Basically what Randy's saying is apologizing because we're going to be talking about things we've talked
about. You will have heard a lot of this before, and we're sorry about that. But we still really like all these books.
I've got a new number one.
So let's start with Dave's new number one.
Let's start with the new number one.
I'm not
one.
Like you schmucks.
And this is the big one. I mean,
this is a big one,
this
one
really is.
Yeah.
Right. So Marvel has been building up their Star Wars output. They've proved their name over the last 6 months or so.
Yeah.
And this is the first kind of canonical, original new, material. Not original material, but stuff that's set in an era that hasn't been explored except in Expanded Universe, all of which got thrown out, basically.
Yeah, this is basically the first time we've seen sort of the Expanded Universe in this sense.
So the book is called Star Wars Shattered Empire. I guess the full title is Journey to Star Wars: The Force Awakens.
Yeah,
it's a long
lead in to the new movie.
It's Shattered Empire, though. That's what this is. Yes. The storyline is, though, right? Yeah. And so I had a miss. I didn't understand what this was going to be. I thought it was going to be probably set, a year prior to the events of the movie, and we were going to get lots of glimpses of it. But in fact, and maybe we will at some point. But this one looks like it's focused on events directly after the end of Empire or Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So it literally, and Randy and I were talking about this, and my theory is that, although of course we all grew up with the original trilogy, burned into our brain, there are a lot of people who came in through the prequels now. You know, that the original trilogy was how many years ago?
1983 was when Return of the Jedi came out. Do you know what that means?
What does it mean?
It is over 30 years since Return of the Jedi was in theaters.
Exactly. And so the feeling was that there is kind of almost a recap of the end of Return of the Jedi here, and I think it's because a lot of the readers don't know it that well, or might not be as versed in it as the people who had to watch it over and over again, wondering if we would ever see a fourth movie.
Assuming we wouldn't.
I'm just saying, pause right here, go watch Return of the Jedi again. It's worth it.
Yeah.
This begins with the final assault on the Death Star. By the way, this is written by Greg Rucka, who is a writer. We're going to be doing one of his books for the book club tonight.
Yep.
We've long liked his stuff. He's primarily a crime writer, but he's definitely done other stuff.
He's done a lot. He wrote Wonder Woman. He wrote Punisher. He wrote Wolverine.
He did espionage stuff, too, when he with Queen and Country. And the sci-fi of Lazarus. Dark, realistic sci-fi.
Yeah.
And co-wrote Gotham Central.
Gotham Central, And a lot of Batman.
Yeah. A lot of Batman.
And so this story begins by focusing on a pilot who's a previously, I believe, unknown pilot, a female pilot who's an A-wing fighter pilot in the thing.
Yep.
And there's a neat action sequence early on. By the way, beautiful art also by
Marco Tocchetto, who did Punisher.
Punisher with Rucka. And everybody knows Luke got out of the Death Star just in the nick of time, and that's in the Imperial shuttle. With the body of his father. But as they have it, the battle is going on, and there's rebel fighters that are about to shoot him down, and she kind of covers his back. So it's just kind of a neat way to tie her into the big heroes of it. But the core plot of it comes when she lands. She and her, is it a husband?
Yes, her husband.
Or are they just lovers?
Clearly husband. Okay. He says something about flirting with my wife.
Okay.
She was in the air. He was on the ground.
He was on Han Solo's team.
Right. So they were the ones who downed the shield for
they give him a cool name. What are they called? They're a special operatives force, and they're, not Rangers, but,
You look it up, Randy. I will say that you catch glimpses of some of our favorite heroes. You do see Han Solo, Chewbacca, Lando, the celebration in the wake.
Pathfinders. Spec Force Pathfinders.
Yeah, it's a cool name. And what happens, though, is they're sort of celebrating, and they find out that there is a stationed on, is it actually on
Endor? It's the moon of Endor.
Yeah.
The forest moon of Endor.
Mm-hmm. Endor itself is...
Endor is not... No, the moon is... It's a forest moon of Endor.
Ah, okay. Gotcha, gotcha. So where's the bad guys in this? Is it on...
The moon? It's always been on the moon of... Here's the thing. We all think of the forest planet where they had the big battle as Endor. Right. It's not.
It's the moon.
It's the forest moon of Endor, which does not have a name.
Right. Now, is that where the bad guys are in this?
They're on the forest moon, okay, yes.
Yeah. Right. So there's basically Imperial holdouts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I shouldn't say too much more, but there's it turns out that they may have a final mission because, as you would imagine, with all the wartime apparatus of the Empire, you know, like... millions upon tens of millions of troops, I'm sure, across the galaxy. Just because you blow up their flagship and win the war does not mean that they are all done with.
Hence right. the title.
Hence the title.
Shattered Empire.
Shattered Empire.
Yeah, this is one of the things in the previously shared universe, or the expanded universe, that they made much. There was Grand Admiral Thrawn,
right? Mm-hmm.
And that was the big thing in Timothy Zahn's trilogy was that the Empire was sort of had another charismatic leader step up and try to reorganize them. And I assume that Rucka will go down similar paths. If he was allowed to, it'd be kind of cool if he reintroduced Thrawn because everybody liked Thrawn.
Yeah, Thrawn's great,
but Zahn created Thrawn.
You're right. Actually, he may not be able to. Although technically, all of that's probably owned by Disney now.
Probably so,
but I don't think he will. But it would go a long way toward all the people who are sort of upset about the expanded universe being more or less wiped out.
Right.
If they bring Thrawn in,
that's true.
They won't do it, but I feel like they should have.
But I also want to mention that Chichetto did a really good job of likenesses.
Yes, he did.
I really feel like he captured, you know, Harrison Ford,
his Lando in particular.
Yeah, and actually, I think his ships.
Yeah.
They look like the ships that
the Lambda-class shuttle that Luke flies out in.
Yeah. But, I mean, everything has got sort of the flavor that you want. The A-wings, the X-wings, the Falcon.
Yeah.
I was going to say, when they go on their special mission thing at the end, they're in a ship that I believe is an original ship, but it's really cool looking. It looks kind of like a combination of a shuttle and fighter.
Yeah.
You know, like a heavy fire shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that looks good. It looks like a Star Wars ship. There's lots of action in this, which, you know, Rucka, while I love him, is usually sometimes more of a laid-back, crime, drama, slow-paced guy.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased to see he embraced the heavy action quotient of Star Wars in this. And I think a lot of people are going to enjoy this.
Yeah, I think so, too. I have to say, it was not what I was expecting, though.
No, it was not.
I think everybody's looking for the Star Wars Force Awakens. They thought we're going to see all the new characters in here and all that.
Yep, I thought we were going
to
see BB.
This is Journey to Star Wars The Force Awakens. This is clearly... I think they want to save the characters for the movies first.
I think so, too.
Well, and because we are going to, in those movies, we're going to see what happens to Luke and Han and Leia and all those characters... Mm-hmm. And I think this will kind of set up where however this ends is probably going to show the direction that their lives are headed.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with wiping away much of the extended universe when they did, this is what the extended universe is. I mean, this is true.
Yeah.
This is what it's going to be.
If you like us are trying to do a trailer blockade, you can remain on trailer blockade and still read this book and not feel like you're getting any spoilers for the new movie.
Correct.
Right.
Which is kind of cool.
I'm sure. I think they are. Where are they going to?
I don't think they are. I think this is going to be post Jedi kind of thing, bridging material, but not.
Yeah, I was
going
to say. So they may not have. You know, usually there's like some prequels to any given comic that spotlight some of the characters that are going to be in it. But
this is going to be 4-issue mini. Then they're going to have a couple of other Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, one shots. So I know C-3PO is getting one, and
yeah.
any of the new characters now.
I have not heard new characters.
Are we sure that C-3PO is getting one, or is C-3PO a misunderstanding that it was actually going to be the C-3PO miniseries that Robinson and Harris are doing?
Maybe so.
I think that's what it is, because it was supposed to come out in November, and that's when it's coming out.
Yeah.
I think people heard that news and assumed it was going to be Force Awakens, and it's not.
It would make sense if they didn't do any serious foreshadowing of it, because it's such a big movie that I can imagine they'd want as much... secrecy as possible.
Yeah, and we know J.J. Abrams likes that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's fanatical about...
Right, it's probably going to be a giant monster in this, just like in... Actually, he didn't direct that, though, did he?
What? Super 8?
Not Super 8. I was thinking of the other one that he, like...
Cloverfield.
Cloverfield,
yeah.
Right. He just produced that.
Anyway.
There was a giant monster in Super 8, though.
That's true. So my pick is Star Wars Shattered Empire. What do you guys got?
Nick?
Okay, time to retread some...
Civil War time!
Civil War... No, not Civil War.
Secret War.
Fool.
I don't want to get to my cheater pick.
Right, Secret Wars. Secret Wars.
My main pick is Amazing Spider-Man: Renew Your Vows, number 5.
The final issue.
The final issue, and damn, it was good.
It was. I might have teared up a little bit of that ending.
Yeah, the ending is great. It feels very Parker-ish.
Yeah.
And I was very happy with what Slott did.
Yeah, me too.
Out of curiosity, I've read a few of the other Secret Wars things lately, some of the ones wrapping, and some of them are kind of ending on darker notes. How was this one, just broadly speaking?
This was not darker. It looked for a little while like it might be going that way, but it does not end on a dark note.
That's good.
I mean, feel like... Yeah, it does not end on a dark note. It feels very Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And that was very important for me. And I'm like, yeah, I'll probably pick this one up because it actually is a story that I like.
Well, that's one of the things I liked about this issue is that it early on, the Renew Your Vows seemed to be about this big bad villain and sort of, you know, a dystopian world and this kind of thing. And it was not so much about the Parker family as I thought it was going to be. And by the end, it is very much about the Parker family and how they interact with this new reality.
And I love Slott's take on MJ and their kid.
Their daughter's great. It's a great character.
Daughter is fantastic. I love sort of her rambunctiousness and her wanting to fight, and I love the code name she comes up with.
Well, you remember how much we all love Molly in Runaways?
Yeah.
She's a lot like that character.
She very much feels like that. Yeah. So, really good story. I thought the showdown between him and the Big Bad, or actually them and the Big Bad, was quite good.
And also, Kubert's art in this is really nice.
Kubert's art was really good.
Yeah.
And honestly, just... It's not just about the Parkers. There are also a lot of Marvel Universe characters that show up.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I still like the little nods there, but really, really good ending to a series that had me worried at the start.
Nice. Yeah, me too. Okay, also ending this week, Planet Hulk number 5, which is my pick. We all liked this, I believe. This is the, you know, Captain America sort of pulp gladiator adventure with Devil Dinosaur. Facing off with the Red King, who's an evil Hulk.
In like an entire kingdom of Hulk tribes, which are like hyper dangerous.
Last issue had a big reveal about Bucky, who he had been coming to save. Yes. This one, basically Cap faces down the Red King and faces the what happened as a result of that last issue. And then there's a big moment with his Doc Hulk, who he's been traveling with.
Yes, there's some twists and turns to be had there.
And comes to sort of a dark ending.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating, and It ends up sort of becoming a little bit of a meditation on the themes of the Hulk traditionally.
Yeah, yeah.
About anger and violence and revenge and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect it to kind of go that way.
Yeah, me neither.
Even though there's Hulks, and even though it's called Planet Hulk, weirdly it had been so much Captain America's story.
Yeah.
But it kind of became something of a story about, you know, what happens when somebody who's sort of a beacon of heroism is somewhat pushed to his end, and
you know, it's funny, Dave. Yeah. You mentioned it being sort of meditation on various different Hulk things, and I realized that ending. I don't want to give too much away, but you could totally think of that as the '70s TV show Hulk ending too.
Right,
very true. That's funny,
and I think that might have been a deliberate nod.
Insert lonely man theme here.
Yep, but yeah, good finale.
I really liked it too. It was on the verge of my pick of the week.
Yeah, my cheater pick is another book I've talked about a lot, Ms. Marvel number 18, which is Ms. Marvel alongside Captain Marvel, the end of the world. Her brother has been given weird powers and is dealing with her psychotic sort of ex-crush who turned out to be kind of a bad guy. And it's all about sort of Kamala dealing with her powers and her sort of hero crush on Captain Marvel. And then gets into sort of, what do you do if you're a hero when the world is ending and you can't do anything to stop it?
Yeah.
And it has this great sort of heart-stopping final moment that I loved.
Yeah. That's a pretty weighty stuff for a character who's, you know, a teen character.
It is really great. And the only reason it's really not my pick this week is because it is sort of mid-story. So Planet Hulk's a better pick in that it's a finale. Right,
a finale kind of has a certain extra oomph.
But Ms. Marvel, I really loved. I'm loving these last day stories. I'm looking forward to them finishing up next issue. And then, of course, relaunching. This book continues to be great.
I just think G. Willow Wilson is such a strong comics writer. Really gets the notion of fun superheroics, but mixes in a great sense of family.
I think she's perfectly suited to this book.
Yeah.
I haven't liked everything she's done. But this, she's very much drawing on her own life, and you can tell, and it's much stronger for it.
Yeah.
Nick, your cheater pick?
As we've already said, Civil War.
Yeah.
fourth issue. We've got one more issue to go. So this is the penultimate issue. And kind of things do come to a head in this one. We find out big bads.
There was some great reveals in this.
There are... The war has started. Just so many big things occur. But also characters get really great moments. I still think Charles Soule is writing one heck of an Iron Man.
He is.
One heck of a Captain America.
Yep.
Captain America gets a great speech in here. And I'm like, it's a long one. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm with it.
I go back to the original Civil War and think, what if this had been the case back in Civil War, like when they were at that Cap and Iron Man had a legitimate disagreement, but they were still both there,
more thoughtfully
felt like
written.
Themselves.
Could you imagine if Marvel actually did play the long con and actually went through their entire thing?
Yeah.
You know, it was sort of Secret Invasion Siege was all sort of part
planned of something
and
like
Civil
this.
War was continuing on.
Yeah, this is a better version of what could have happened.
Yeah. And I like all the characters, their costumes are fantastic. The militaristic moral take on Captain America is very intriguing. I have to hand it to Lynelle Francis Yu. His character creation here is really, really strong.
Yep. There's a splash page of the assault across the divide that is really, really spectacular. Shows all the troops and has a couple giant people and just looks really, really good.
And I would buy a figure of this Iron Man.
It's a great Iron Man armor.
In a heartbeat. And that's saying, I own a lot of Iron Man. That is a really cool design.
It is.
Is that just to, like, Tony's newest armor?
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of, like, Exo Man on War. It's got sort of the faceplate.
Clear faceplate.
You can actually see his face.
Oh, interesting.
It's just a really cool design. But, again, really great story. I think we might be sold out of a couple of the issues of Civil War. I don't know if they're still available. But once this all gets collected, I highly, highly recommend people checking it out.
Yeah, it's really good.
Put it next to Civil War on the shelf, and then with a little note that says, this one's better.
Dave, what is your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is a graphic novel. It is simply the compilation of the miniseries we talked about a billion times, Descender.
Yep.
This was Jeff Lemire's sci-fi book for Image. I kind of think of it as somewhere between like Steven Spielberg futurism or Steven Spielberg vibe in general, and sort of Mass Effect. It's got Mass Effect's world building and occasionally its harshness, and its badass characters like Driller.
Driller, real killer.
He's a real killer.
Such a good character.
As well as the a childlike robot, and some of the
and his dog,
yes. And that sort of general sense of humanity that sort of tends to pervade in Spielberg movies. So I don't have a lot to say about it because we've talked about it so much more, but it is, I believe, a $10 trade.
It is a $10 trade.
It's a great story with amazingly jaw-dropping art.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's probably 5 issues in there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So you're getting this as essentially $2 an issue. That's a fantastic price.
If you've been waiting on the trade, we've talked about this. It's been the pick of the week at least 3 times.
Yeah.
Definitely check it out.
Now is your chance.
Yes. All right. Also on the stack this week, the latest S.H.I.E.L.D. 50th anniversary, which is Quake. Sort of a weird mix of TV and comic continuity, but kind of a fun issue. And has a guest stars The Avengers, was kind of a fun issue. Darth Vader number 9, which continues the story of Darth Vader trying to evade the Emperor's handler, who is trying to sort of audit him and figure out what he's doing.
Yep. There's a nice bit of tension going on between those two characters.
Well, because he's a good adversary.
Yeah.
He feels smart.
Yeah, he's legitimate, not just... And you know, some of the early guys we saw Vader go up against were kind of those... The sort of the bureaucratic types.
Yeah.
You kind of want to get force choked.
Yeah.
This guy, he's a little bit more Grand Admiral Thrawn-ish.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of legit.
Yeah. Star Trek Green Lantern number 3 introduces all the various lanterns and... it takes us from the Klingon homeworld to the Romulan homeworld to the Gorn homeworld, and introduces the big bad of the series. And if you like Blackest Night and you like Star Trek, I recommend checking this out.
It also it ends with a something that we kind of guessed at.
Yeah.
By the character that was going to be used,
right?
It was Necron.
Yeah.
It's got some stuff that we kind of predicted, and I think is a neat idea.
Yeah, it is. Bitch Planet number 5 comes out after, I don't know, a year, whatever it's been, finally completing the first story arc of that book. Starve number 4 continues to be a really strong book of sort of a, not apocalyptic, but sort of dystopian, it's the 1% ruling kind of thing, and it's a cooking show set in this sort of pre-apocalyptic world. It's Brian Wood, Dennis Yelsey's Elge. It's really good. I'm really liking it. Secret Wars, two more books. The finale of the three-issue Red Skull series, which is pretty good. And the finale of the five-issue Secret Wars 2099 series, which I really liked. And want to see more of the Avengers and Defenders of 2099 now. There is a new printing of Pixu, The Mark of Evil, which is a fantastic black-and-white horror haunted house book. Written by, or it's four different creators. Gabriel Ba, Becky Cloonan, Vasilis Lolos, and Fabio Moon, who you know from a variety of things. But it's
that's a powerhouse art team.
It's haunted house stories. It's creepy. It's beautiful. Definitely, if you're in the Halloween mood, check that one out.
You know, I think I'd forgotten that that was a horror type
thing.
I'll have to take a peek at that.
I have this in hardcover, and it's great.
Nice.
The collection of Chrononauts, the Mark Miller and Sean Murphy time travel adventure series that I quite enjoyed, actually, and is beautiful artwork. So if you liked Punk Rock Jesus and Joe the Barbarian and The Wake, all Murphy art, this is another one to check out. And it is a done-in-one, basically. It's a $10 trade, four issues. And then Saga Volume 5, of course, which is the latest in the Saga trades. Nick, what else is on your stack?
For Secret Wars, I have A-Force number 4, which is the penultimate issue. Really, really enjoyed it. Things are revealed. Things are punched. You know,
some fun. A's are forced.
Exactly. giant size, a little A versus X. You know,
Is each one of those a standalone kind of story?
No, actually, it's been an ongoing story.
Isn't it a goof on Civil War, basically? Or A versus X,
I guess? A versus X, yeah. Kind of sort of about them trying to vie for the attention of two human twins. They want them to join their club, essentially. And that's been an ongoing story.
Oh, okay.
This one sees the Guardians of the Galaxy make an appearance, and the Inhumans, which are now trying to vie for their attention as well. A lot of fun stuff in there. Then I've got Legacy of Luther Strode, which was really, really good. I'm excited that another issue of that. Batman 44, which is a guest book that has Scott Snyder working with Brian Azzarello with art by Jock.
Ooh.
It's a pretty powerhouse team, and I was flipping through it. Jock's art is incredible, as always.
Snyder and Jock worked together on Black Mirror, which I love.
And this is taking place a little right after Zero Year, so...
Oh, okay, so it's classic Batman.
Kind of, sort of. It's a...
Snyder's retconned classic Batman?
Exactly.
But it's not Gordon in the Chappie suit, is what
correct. It's not. It's actually Batman. And then I have one more from Boom, a book which I have not yet read yet, but it's called Diesel. It looks very steampunkish. I thought the art was particularly great, very anime.
Reminds me of Umberto Ramos a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. And just looks like it's got a great sense of humor. Definitely want to check that out. Dave, what do you got?
I think y'all covered most of the stuff I've got, but there's a new Action Comics starring Identity Revealed Superman.
Yep.
I don't know. They need like a name.
A code name for him.
Yeah, code name for Clark Kent Superman. there's also an issue of Superman Batman. So it's basically, those are the Greg Pak ones.
Yep.
Those hit the same week.
You're still following that whole story, huh?
I fell off a little bit because the stuff going on in the main Superman book by the new writer with the John Romita Jr.
Yeah.
I'm not as big into that. The stuff that Pak is doing, I'm still liking those.
Okay.
So I'll be reading both of those. Image has a new book called Head Lopper, which is sort of a fantasy barbarian warrior thing, but it's got kind of a cartoony art style that's, I don't know, like, I see elements of Mignola, I see elements of Adventure Time. It's also this, like, giant $5.99, like, it's huge. But basically, if you like fantasy books or kind of, like, stylish art, you mentioned Vasilis Lolos.
Yeah.
If you like that kind of stylized art, you should give it a flip through. This one may be interesting if only on the artistic level. It looks cool. I like the style of the guy on it. And then there's... I also wanted to mention a hardcover book that came out this week called Little Robot. I don't know who Ben Mackey is.
I know the name, but I can't remember what he's done.
This is a very beautifully illustrated, sort of dialogue light story about a girl who finds a robot that just sort of fell off of a shipping crate somewhere.
Yep.
You know, there's elements of the Iron Giant, even Wall-E. It's a fairly cute.
This looks like it'd be a good one to introduce kids to comics. It'd be a good bedtime story kind of thing. It is long enough that even with its light dialogue, that it's, you know, it's more like a little graphic novel for kids.
Yeah.
But it looks really nicely done. I was flipping through it, and I thought it looked great. And I suppose it's somewhat notable also that the girl is, she's African-American, and so not a, just a, an underrepresented minority in, yeah. In like, little sci-fi adventure books. Like, Iron Giant is great, but it's one more white kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So there may just be a little bit more viewer reader identification on this one, which is always nice to see.
Yep. All right. That wraps up our comics talk for the week. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about our topic for the week, which is going to be a sort of a thought topic we came up with to sort of talk about TV shows and movies a little bit.
Yeah, we think you're going to like it.
All right, well, none of us have done much watching or consuming of pop culture the last few weeks. There was nothing we haven't already talked about.
Right.
You know, I finished Narcos, we're watching Friends.
Hey, I've got a quick thing to throw out, though.
Yeah, sure.
This is a short version. You know, we were talking about Morrison on the Fat Man on the Batman podcast.
Yep, sure.
The other week. I decided to start listening to another one, just mm-hmm. try one out. I've listened to all three Morrison episodes. They're great. But I started listening to the one with Mark Hamill, mm-hmm. voice of the Joker. A definitive voice of the Joker, and you know, it's another like 2 hour one. I probably listened to like an hour and a half of it last night while I was just kind of doing chores and cleaning and stuff like that. I'm just happy to announce that it's really good.
Okay,
Mark Hamill's very interesting to hear talk. He's more than just his voices, and having done Luke, he's done lots of other TV work and has interesting celebrity stories. He's a natural, you know, kind of raconteur.
Yeah.
And I did not realize he's a legit geeky guy.
Oh, yeah.
He
remember, he did that Comic-Con movie? He, like, did a movie at Comic-Con where he directed?
I guess I did.
And then he wrote a comic book called The Black Pearl, I believe, for Dark Horse way back when. Yeah.
And he recounts his childhood where he was like a comic book nerd back when it for sure was
definitely
not cool.
Definitely was not cool.
But most of all, he's just interesting to hear talk, and, you know, he's funny and interesting and gracious, too. He's not a jerk.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's another one to recommend. I would at least try out that one if you haven't tried out any of the others.
Cool. So what we decided to do, though, was we'd pick a topic that we could sort of talk about, and I suggested, since there are so many movies that have been turned into TV shows lately, and to great success.
Yes, Fargo, Hannibal.
I've got a whole list here.
Okay,
so
yes.
Fargo, Hannibal just wrapped up. And then in about 3 weeks, we're starting Minority Report and Limitless.
Right.
Also, 12 Monkeys, I believe, is still going on Sci-Fi.
Yep.
Then you go back a little further, you've got Sarah Connor Chronicles, Bates Motel, Young Indiana Jones, and, of course, the big one, Stargate SG-1,
right.
Which was a legitimate franchise in the 90s. Like,
right.
They spun off two other shows.
Bigger as a show than it had been as a kind of a cult movie.
Yeah. So we started deciding, we thought we'd talk about the movies we've seen, stuff that we thought would be interesting to bring to TV shows, and if so, sort of how you would do it to get it right.
Right. And, you know, there's also been, like, any number of failed ones.
Yeah.
So our general assumption here is, like, assume that it's getting good writers.
Assume the good version,
you know,
yes.
Because, you know, we realize all of these could flop horribly.
Oh, they could all be a really bad idea, yeah.
You know, and I'll say, like, you know, Bates Motel is good but not great. I don't know, it's not in the League of Hannibal and Fargo and stuff like that. But,
right.
You know, I enjoyed it.
Sure.
And you know, we talked a little bit about Galaxy Quest last week.
Yeah.
And how we thought you might do it. So yeah, let's
all right,
let's
Dave,
kick it off.
Dave, what's first on your list?
The first on my list, which is fairly genre heavy,
yep.
Kind of sci-fi. And
mine is
stuff,
a little bit too.
Is Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
I know we're getting a new Ghostbusters
sure.
movie. It's going to basically be its own thing. So this is probably more of like on some alternate Earth G.
Yeah, sure.
For Ghostbusters. So that's what the G is for.
Also on that world, alligators are people, and people are alligators.
Essentially, all the stuff that is montaged in Ghostbusters, you know, all the other smaller things and the character interactions and even the soap opera of the romances and stuff like that, I would expand into a full-on TV show.
Well, it's interesting because they did the animated series,
right.
Which is beloved, the real Ghostbusters.
Right.
There was also a role-playing game from West End Games. Did you guys know that? Did you ever play it?
I did not.
So, I really wanted it. I remember flipping through it at King's Hobby Shop here in Austin back when I was a kid.
I had it. I played it. I really liked it.
You actually played it?
I played it. I ran that game.
Wow.
Here's the thing. It was well written. It was a lot of fun. When I moved from college, I got rid of a lot of my gaming stuff, like all my GURPS books, all my old D&D books, everything that I didn't want to pack and ship from Colorado to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
There are not a lot of regrets in there. I'm not going to play any of those old games. I don't really deeply regret losing all my GURPS stuff because I'm not going to play it. I wish I had kept the Ghostbusters game because it was a fun game. And
it's crazy that it hasn't been like in some way reissued or built upon. It's probably license issues.
Yeah, same with West End Star Wars. West End Star Wars beloved, but they can't put it back out because of all the rights issues.
Right.
But the interesting thing is the franchise, the notion of the role-playing game was that it was Lewis Tully had become chief operating officer of the Ghostbusters and had franchised it.
Huh.
So your players were a franchise of Ghostbusters in a different city.
Good idea.
That's a great framework for a show. Yeah, you make a franchise, and then you can do stuff with the franchise. If you ever want to do a, you know, you recast. Bill Murray's not going to do a Ghostbusters TV show.
No. But
Rick Moranis might.
He retired.
Hey. Oh, okay.
I think if you shoot for the general vibe of it, of comedy, and sometimes actually kind of spooky, I think.
Yeah.
I would consider, like, in any given season, like, sort of a big bad or a major threat that they're dealing with. Like, you know, have you guys noticed that the ghosts have been getting stronger lately?
Yeah.
Sort of a Buffy template
or
style.
Yeah, a little bit like that. Or, you know, it's like that there's... you know, certain things are changing about them. They might have an adversary in the form of, like, who's the EPA guy or whatever?
Oh, Walter Peck.
Right. You know, he would be a great supporting character, somebody like that.
I do like the franchise and seeing it outside of New York.
Yeah.
Do one in...
Texas.
Sure. Yeah. Austin, Los Angeles.
Boston, yeah.
Yeah.
It just opens up sort of a variety of characters. And,
well, if you made your main character, say, like, if Tully running Ghostbusters operations, one of the main guys, he could go to different franchise offices with his squad of Ghostbusters, and, like, you could introduce people who are trainees, you could have problems crop up in different places.
Right. Well, I was also thinking, like, you know, what if they're having funding issues?
Yeah.
What if there's a trough of ghosts, and they, like, start losing some money, and so they're like, well, our equipment isn't always working, you know, like, half the time the ghost trap doesn't work, you know, this could be, like, kind of running subplots.
Yeah, you could also do a season or something where there was a competitor, like the Spectre Trappers.
Right, yeah, that'd be fantastic.
They're Jonas's with corporate sponsorship.
You know what I think would be fun? Make them likably sleazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like you almost can't help but root for them a little bit.
The
little scumbags. Anyway, I think it could be fun.
I absolutely think this could be a fun thing. Nick, what's first on your list?
I'm actually going to skip down to not my first one.
Okay.
Because that one's a fun one, and I wanted to do a little bit of a drama.
Yeah,
and I actually thought 12 Angry Men might be really interesting.
How would you do that as an ongoing?
I think you would have to do it as more of a season, sort of Fargo-esque.
So a trial each season?
Well, real trials are not wrapped up in 2 hours. So.
No. But I'm thinking...
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, that's how you could expand it.
You could expand it to... But it would be like maybe a new trial every season. Not unlike American Horror Story. You get something along those lines. But
sure.
You really focus in on the character interactions and how sort of...
I feel like our audience might not know 12 Angry Men. And if they don't, go watch it. For God's sake, go watch 12 Angry Men.
I mean, it's amazing
courtroom drama.
Yeah.
It is. And I think courtroom dramas do really well.
So, quick explanation of 12 Angry Men.
Basically, it's been a long time since
Who's the lead?
Jack Lemmon, isn't
it? I believe it is.
Jack Lemmon, I thought it was one of those more like...
I think Jack Lemmon might be one of the guys... Is the guy who's angry.
I thought it was more like, you know, like... Not the guy who's Atticus Finch, but I... But maybe
it's not it's not Gregory Peck. Is
no, it?
It
is. I believe it's.
Y'all keep talking about the premise.
Is it
Dora Fonda?
I don't know, but Dave's gonna look it up. But here's the deal: the 12 Angry Men is a jury. There's a murder trial, right?
It's a murder
trial. Basically, 11 of them are convinced this guy's guilty. They close it out and get done. And then one guy has reasonable doubt,
right?
And then they all sort of badger him, and he talks to them, and it's an argument about. And it sort of shows you how the justice system works. It's an argument for maybe this guy didn't do it, and people are bringing their own biases and just wanting to be done with it. And it's a really great sort of character-driven story.
And even the people who are like sort of hang him now, they have some depth to them.
Yeah, they do.
They're not just Henry Fonda, by the way. That's
Henry Fonda. And I actually felt like, you know, with, you know, politics nowadays, you can really, you know, just show in some of that.
Yeah.
You can... deal with a lot of character aspects of their home lives, of the jurors, and how they deal with it. You know,
sort of an ensemble cast.
Yeah,
kind of
do an ensemble
There might not always be a sort of a full on Henry Fonda, you know, last good man.
Right.
I can imagine that you might have a bunch of mixed, you know, kind of tarnished people.
A very real world, not unlike, you know, The Wire or some kind of dark.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I thought it might be interesting.
And you're thinking like a season for each each case and kind of like explore it from different angles.
Yep. Yep.
Do you think it all takes place in the jury or in the jury room? Like you never see the courtroom itself. You only see them talk about it.
I think to really make it work, you'd flash back to the actual crime from time to time.
Yes.
Like as they discussed, here's how it could have happened, and then you show sort of almost a reenactment sort of thing.
It's interesting. I mean, kind of a John Grisham-ish kind of take at times.
I like this idea, Nick.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it could be done. I would tend to think of it as a series that would really like. Slightly shorter seasons, you know, like the 10 to 12 episodes.
10 to 12,
I kind of wanted to, you know, throw in some characters that could carry over the DA or...
Sure.
You know, could be the same.
Or the judge or whatever,
Or you get, like, a judge or two that'll stick around.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it had some merits.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting part of the courtroom drama we haven't really seen as much. So that's a good idea. And way less geeky than most of our choices, so Nick probably just won already. All right, so I'm going to go with my first pick is actually I'm not going to cheat first thing. I'm going to steal one of Dave's.
What?
Yeah.
That's fine. I've got so many right
now. Blade Runner.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, because, I mean, Philip K. Dick is very adaptable. They're doing Man in the High Castle. They're doing Minority Report. And Blade Runner is a world that is so interesting to explore. Like, you go back and show when the androids first gained sentience. You show, you know, what it's like to be a Blade Runner in the height of operations. And then you show what happens as it becomes less...
It's
less...
also a world that looks like it's been through, like, some kind of nuclear exchange.
Yeah.
We know that there's... Cities are, like, just, like, these... Not cesspools, but, you know, they're, like... Bad air, so bad. Life on Earth is bad enough that they're really pushing those
off-world colonies. And you could see the off-world colonies.
I would love to see the off-world colonies.
Yeah.
Like, what about a case that takes you there? You get special jurisdiction and all that stuff. What about the attack ships on fire?
I was going to say.
Yeah.
There were a few lines in there that led
to Tannhauser Gate and all that.
Yeah, you could see some actual, like, fighting and war and that kind of thing.
The focus on Deckard. I think there's so much more you can do in that world.
Well, you know, if you're going to call it Blade Runner... Dealing with seeing the world through the eyes of Blade Runner units, like they probably have an off-world Blade Runner unit.
You know what I would do?
Yeah.
I would do a new. It would be post movie, although I wouldn't have the movie's continuity. I have it built in.
Sure,
but I would do sort of what they did with Almost Human, where they have an android that they have assigned to be a Blade Runner. I mean, we know that's Deckard thing that he didn't know it was an android. But I would have a human Blade Runner paired with an android Blade Runner hunting his own kind. And I would have this Blade Runner be an android who was in the war, so he could flash back to his war stuff and maybe have buddies who he fought. So he'd have to be tracking down his own like war buddies.
Yeah.
And then from there, you've got an entry into the Tyrell Corporation and whether or not they built this guy with any back doors that are for their own purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of thing.
Honestly, they mentioned like Pris or one of the other androids in there was like what they called like a pleasure unit.
Yeah.
So she was like clearly they like androids are like they could be used for prostitution. You know, essentially legalized prostitution in colonies.
They were used for a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a zillion different moral dilemmas to be looked at for them too.
The only problem is
Almost
Human tackled a lot of this territory,
mm.
and they did it well. But it was more of it was a shinier future. But it was heavily
Literally,
influenced
was
by Blade Runner. I mean,
Blade Runner was like such a noir piece too. You know, it was like a future noir.
Yeah.
That you know, it also gains a lot through its atmosphere and something of its stylishness.
So maybe instead of being a cop, maybe you do a freelance Blade Runner thing, and that's why there's an android because they're Blade Runners for hire.
Right.
They're sort of PIs, and then we can do the noir PI tropes and stuff, too. You could do a Maltese Falcon homage where there's some kind of android.
It seems like a rich future.
Oh, yeah. I think you could totally do it. I think that the failure of Minority Report or failure of Almost Human probably kills any chance of this actually being made.
Probably so.
But it's a fun idea to think about.
We're throwing out magical possibilities.
Yes, magical possibilities.
The budgetary thing, I think, is what hurts it.
Yeah. Dave?
Right. And, you know, a Ghostbusters thing would be costly, too. But you know, we've seen pretty impressive uses of budget these days. You know.
Oh yeah, no, and like I said, this is a no for you know.
Yeah, this is just fun.
Right,
Dave. What's your next?
I'm gonna do one of the horror ones.
Okay, all right.
This would be Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Okay,
Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a movie concept that goes back to the 50s,
yep.
where you know.
Where it was clearly a stand-in for the communism.
Well, you say clearly, but I feel like I had not thought about that until my brother, who's a big film geek, talked about it. It seems somewhat obvious in retrospect. You know, you become sort of a mindless automaton.
Yep.
It's kind of meant to you know, be like, oh, that's what communism will do to you. But I believe it was meant to be sort of spoofing the fervor over it.
Yeah.
Although, of course, in the movie, the threat is all too real.
Yeah.
But I I've liked many different versions of it. There was a great version in the 70s that had Leonard Nimoy and
Donald Sutherland.
Great stuff. Maybe the best of them, actually.
Overall. Yeah, I think it is.
And some other interesting versions that have not quite hit that height. But what I always like is that notion of the sort of slow burn paranoia, which they live took into an action movie direction,
right?
But where you know people you thought you knew are acting strange and different, it's rather pronounced for the duration of a 2-hour movie, But I would, in a series, expand that to have these aliens that have landed on Earth that are maybe. You know, it was essentially like weird spores, like plants, you know, that in the previous ones. I would expand that so the aliens have a range or can, you know, exhibit some more emotions so that they're – and show a slow burn recognition that of a community or a city being taken over.
Yeah.
And a realistic kind of attempt to show what you would do if you thought that, like, well, what if – you know, I can't – can I go to the cops? Have they already taken over the cops? Do I go above them, you know?
Yeah.
I remember my brother and I used to do this as sort of just a, you know, the same way you'll do the, what would you do in a zombie crisis?
Right.
We would do the Invasion of the Body Snatchers one, and he had the notion that he would send a very legitimate threat to the president to try and bring down federal power on it before it kind of got out of control. Like, you know, and it, honestly, if it's reached that high level, you're hosed anyway.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, you could have both this sort of clandestine sort of guerrilla stuff going on, but also just sort of a mystery investigation and creepy alien pod people.
Who do you trust?
Exactly, yeah. That's the story. I think you do... I think it'd be interesting to build towards a... towards closure on something like this, like a 2 or 3 season thing and it's done.
Yeah.
But honestly, it would be somewhat interesting to see a slightly post-apocalyptic thing where it's like they've taken over, but there are, like... undergrounds here and there.
Right.
And you always wonder, like, what would they do when they take over? What is their perfect world like?
Yeah.
You know, do they just kind of like, so they're also always supposed to be emotionless, but they must do something.
Right. Yeah.
It'd be interesting that'd be an interesting job for the writers to kind of come up with what their end game is and maybe come up with some new ideas that the movies haven't shown.
Yeah, I like it.
So spooky drama is how I would play that
one. Nick, what else is on your list?
I'm going to go with something that I always felt needed a sequel. So why not television?
Yep.
True Lies.
I love True Lies.
I mean, True Lies was a great movie. I mean, in some ways, I think it might be Arnold Schwarzenegger's most entertaining.
Yeah.
It's up there.
I mean, everyone
can
say
Cameron or a magic team, whenever they work together, they always turned up good stuff. Yeah.
But I think a television show could very easily work.
I can see a lot of ways it could go wrong. I mean, primarily that Arnold Schwarzenegger being in it was a big... Arnold Schwarzenegger being the spy is a big part of it, but... I can see a lot of ways it could go right.
Yeah, I mean, you could either... I mean, I don't know if you would continue with his character.
Again, you could retell
the movie story
if you
first.
That could
yeah,
be, like the whole
the first season.
One.
But I think I kind of like the notion. Yeah, I agree with that. I liked the notion of him and his wife being a team.
Yeah,
and sort of continuing on in that mold, doing missions.
It would be kind of neat if you could kind of maybe encapsulate the movie in the first few episodes and move to the team aspect sort of quick.
Yeah.
Actually, I think what I would do season one is basically the movie, you know, set up with where she doesn't know and she's trying to, like, her big arc would be figuring out that he's the spy.
Right. That's sort of like the season finale.
And then season two.
We know that he's been spying for years.
You could even do, I mean, honestly, I think if you get this right and you get the right people, you could do 2 seasons of him being the secret spy and her slowly figuring out, and then the big season 2 reveal is they start working together. And then, interestingly, if you keep going... You can have season 4 or 5 where Dana's getting old enough to be recruited and wants to be recruited.
Right.
And they have the debate of whether they want their daughter in this life.
Right.
Which is something they've done in The Americans, but they could do it in a much less real and more fun way.
Right. The whole thing with True Lies is it's spies as fun. You know, clearly the agency he worked for was practically S.H.I.E.L.D.
What was his name? What was the name of their organization?
I don't even remember.
It had a fun name.
Was it Orion? No. I don't remember. But
I mean, it could be just a bunch
and
of agents.
Charles Preston was essentially
He was Nick Fury.
And it's funny. I remember the villains' names, the Sand Scorpions, but I don't remember.
No, not Sand Spider.
Sand Spiders.
Because it sounds scary.
It sounds scary. I don't know. I think if you kind of transpose that sense of humor, get that sort of action adventure, think like Mr. and Mrs. Smith,
yeah,
or, and True Lies, what they did. I think it could be a lot of fun.
I agree.
Good supporting cast.
Yeah, it did. Too. Yeah, you're his techie nerdy guy.
Right, and then the
Tom Arnold.
I would adapt those guys directly.
Yeah, into absolutely.
TV characters. Yeah. So you have some ensembles in the spy agency.
You know who I'd cast if you could get him? Patton Oswalt is the Tom Arnold character.
Yeah, I can see that.
Oh yeah, fantastic.
And I don't know who you get as the Schwarzenegger type dude.
I do feel like in a weird way, kind of part of it is his physicality. So you need somebody who's, if not like a giant like Arnold Schwarzenegger, looks physically powerful.
Yeah.
The same way that like Daniel Craig's Bond is physically intimidating.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like the suave thing is not as big a part of it.
I mean, the obvious, if you could get him, The Rock would be a great guy, but he's not. He wouldn't do it.
No, right?
But I do think, in a weird way, that's a good example of, like, you want somebody kind of a little larger than life.
And charming.
But who can also play charming and kind of funny.
Yeah.
And The Rock is a good example of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'd be down for a magically good True Lies series.
All right, so we're round in now, and I feel like I can cheat. So, so my notion here is not specific movie, but a series of movies and a series of books.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Harrison Ford, Tom Clancy movies are ripe for an adaptation.
Jack Ryan.
Yeah, the Jack Ryan. But I don't know the Jack. I think what you do is this: the Rainbow Six, the Clark from those movies was head of international special ops
and
team.
Ding Chavez.
Yeah.
Like,
I think a sort of a period piece, slightly modern but not modern.
Yeah.
Special ops, military, political type thing would be really interesting.
If I'm not mistaken from the book, they were a multinational team, I think.
Yeah.
Actually, they may not have been.
No, they were multinational anti-terrorists.
They operated for sure in other countries, and what they did is they would always, when they suited up, they would use the counter-terrorist uniforms of whatever country they were in.
Right.
Because it was meant to be invisible.
Yeah.
And, of course, there was a meta plot with, like, a world-ending kind of terrorist plot.
Yeah.
And somebody who, like, catches on to them. They start noticing in some of the videos they've seen of terrorist things, common movements and things like that. And they're like, that guy looks, is reminding me of somebody from one of these other videos.
Yeah.
I see a lot of good in this idea. Mm-hmm. Just, you get the action of that, but you really get the suspense instead of the tech. And
it doesn't have to be super big budget.
No.
I mean, you can do shootouts and that kind of stuff. There's not a lot of big budget things. If you want to really blow out the budget on the season finale, you bring in the Red October or something. You do something big on a submarine or something like that.
And
I think you do the politics stuff. Like, you go into the CIA and you go into the president's cabinet and that kind of stuff.
Do the Jack Ryan for CIA.
Yeah.
If you want to do a little nod.
Yeah.
Well, Jack Ryan,
he's one of the analysts.
Could be like a key supporting character.
Yeah.
Almost more like, who is it? Will Graham is to in Silence of the Lambs and everything. But, the mission, the ops head might be like the main character.
Yeah. This is not unlike, say, what they were doing in 24. I think it's just a little less cartoonish and rah-rah American-y.
It would have to be a little more globe hopping.
Did you guys ever watch MI6 or anything like that?
I've watched some of it.
Kind of along those lines.
Yeah.
Definitely more serious take.
Rainbow Six was a global enterprise, and so are you thinking world hopping?
I think world hopping. I mean, the other thing is, this is not unlike what they're doing in Strike Back for Cinemax, but that is a secret off the books British spy organization, and it is because it's Cinemax, it's a little more sort of sex and violence, but it is globe hopping.
Right.
It can be done on a TV budget.
Yeah, I think playing around with the world of Tom Clancy would be potentially fun.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if they wanted to kind of blow up his world a little bit, they could use, the dude from Splinter Cell.
Oh, yeah.
That's in the near future.
That is near future, I think.
Wow.
But you could hint at some of that stuff.
Yeah.
You could tie in bits and pieces of all his different little side projects.
Yeah. Dave, what you got?
I'm going to go with sort of adventure, comedy, romance now.
Okay.
This is sort of maybe an accompanying thing to True Lies. Romancing the Stone.
Yeah.
We talked about this a little bit before we started recording.
Do people know what Romancing the Stone is?
Because it was the same year as Indiana Jones, wasn't it?
It was a few years later.
It was later,
probably. They had put out the second Indiana Jones movie right around the same
time. Yeah, yeah.
But in the early 80s, there was a movie starring called Romancing the Stone, starring Kathleen Turner and
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas. she was a successful romance writer
yep.
who wrote these kind of adventuresome romances, but was failing at it in life.
Yeah, she had Jack was the name of her character. Yeah. He was in, and he was like this mysterious man in shadow. And
yeah. Her super handsome macho romance. You know, the strapping guy on that cover.
She was the very kind of stay at home. Very afraid of to interact with people.
Right.
Yeah. Her editor had to drag her out to bars to go looking for men.
Yeah. And, of course, what happens is she ends up involved in a real-life adventure.
In Cartagena, Colombia.
Right. It's the dangerous world of Colombia. And like, there's sort of... I'm trying to remember. Are there...
There's drugs.
Drug runners?
Her sister somehow got involved with the drug runners.
Right, right.
And it's about ancient artifacts.
Right.
Yeah, there's some treasure hunting as well.
Indiana Jones-ish thing.
Yeah.
Because what happens is she runs into this guy who's basically like this... guide, I guess.
Soldier of Fortune guide type,
guy played by Michael Douglas.
I mean, he's there basically trying to make money by capturing and selling birds.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, right. But he's, you know, he's handy with the weapons, and he knows his way around the rainforest and all this, and he ends up helping her out. Of course, they kind of fall for each other.
Yeah.
But, and she ends up unexpectedly, because of, like, sort of her writing experience, outthinking him sometimes, or outwitting, you know, the bad guys.
Yeah.
Which includes some comedic bad guys like Danny DeVito. Who's great in it. As well as some, like, more dangerous henchmen who are like, you know, these brutal killers.
Colombian Secret Police.
Yeah, Colombian Secret Police. There's lots of chases and
Captain
fun stuff.
Lolo.
It was directed by Richard Donner?
Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's super fun.
People may tell you there's a sequel called Jewel of the Nile. Don't believe them.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist.
It did not occur.
Nope.
But my notion is sort of their further adventures.
Yeah.
I would probably go ahead and, this is another one where I'd probably take the movie and sort of expand it as their first season.
Yep.
All the stuff in and around Colombia, you know, I would drag out through a few more episodes.
Yep.
Introduce some other supporting players.
I'd give her sister an arc.
I was going to say the sister.
And make her a supporting character going forward, yeah.
Zolo should be more involved.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I forget the character name of Danny DeVito's character.
Yeah, me too.
But also, like, her editor
should be a major supporting character.
She should be in it.
You know what else about this? This would fit right in with the 80s stuff like Heart to Heart and Magnum P.I. That kind of thing. It would fit right in
lighthearted adventure.
Yeah.
I would honestly, after that first arc ends, I would have her kind of like decide to go do some globe hopping with him to get ideas for new books and stuff like that.
You know, one of the problems...
And they would stumble into adventures.
One of the problems that we keep running into with our notions is this globe-hopping notion.
Yeah.
And one of the things TV people like is fixed sets that you can do bottle episodes and fixed characters, fixed casts.
Completely...
And that's 12 Angry Men is probably one of the better pitches we have because it's... So I think you'd have to cheat it a little bit, but I could totally see it working.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, here's the thing. You can have adventures in America.
Yeah.
You know? It's not a fixed set, but they could go to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And there could be, you know, guys who are trying to... I don't know what you'd do in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
There's got to be some artifacts or something in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, but this would be all about the character chemistry and the as much sort of comedy as action.
Yeah, yeah.
Nick, you got another pick for us?
I do, and I'm kind of a little unsure of how it would work.
Yep.
But Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, this is rife. It made a ton of money with the its current sequel.
Yep.
I just feel like it can be adapted to television in such a way.
With a budget?
You know, here's the thing. You remember that failed Fox show that was had them time traveling?
Yes.
What was it called? Do you remember?
It's on Netflix. It ran for one season. It was like, anyway,
it was bad, but it had cost overruns because of the effects.
Yeah.
But it's doable.
I think it's doable. And I think if you were kind of a little bit safe with your use of dinosaurs.
Yeah.
You don't go hog wild.
Don't have a character who rides one.
Right.
In a weird way, it's a little bit like the zombies of Walking Dead.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of characters talking. When the zombies show up, you want them to be cool and scary, but they don't have to be there 24/7.
Yeah.
But I think if you sort of base it on, like, one of the workers at Engine, or sort of in its initial heyday, maybe you get Richard Attenborough's character, you know, you're with him when you find sort of the first fossilized DNA.
Are you thinking you recreate the movie first?
I think you can kind of, you know...
Because the conflict of Jurassic Park is always something goes wrong and the dinosaurs get loose.
Right.
So how do you keep that going as a season-long arc?
In the books, they for sure made out that dinosaurs had gotten to the mainland.
Yeah.
That they were in the forests, that they had found some way... They were, like, eating crops that had... That they had gotten these, you know, bred them genetically so that they had to get this certain chromosome or
right,
something like
that. Right.
Or they would die and they would get injections of it. Lysine.
You know what I would do? I would probably recreate the first movie a little bit, but it's going to be hard to do that good as budget. So I think you might want to just sort of compress it. But I would have the dinosaurs gotten to the mainland and are spreading, and I would have a Muldoon style team that is operating out of a base somewhere in America. That'd be your set. It's an engine, a corporate base, and they are basically dinosaur hunters. They respond to dinosaur reports. Like, some kid runs into a dinosaur in the National Park, and they go in, they quarantine it, they track down the dinosaur, and then there could be... Is Engine the bad guys? Who's the good guys?
There's no good guys.
Engine is...
Oh, there was a rival agency that's completely corrupt.
So the rival agency would be always trying to be on top of them to try and go get the dinosaur DNA?
Well, because consider... If what you know, like they would be like trying to exterminate or eradicate or or contain
and bring it back to Jurassic Park.
But
yeah.
you can bet that terrorist groups would like to have velociraptors to unleash in a town square.
Yeah.
Or what if the canister from the first movie,
Nedry's
canister, does get found?
Yeah,
right.
By a rival, whatever.
Right, right.
And you know that's taken to the United States or
right.
you know something along those lines, and you know in secret they're created. Things, of course, go bad. It spreads. And then you have the Muldoon.
Yeah.
Things like that. It could be fun.
You could have, as subplots, other people who are developing him.
Yeah.
Like, well, we understand that there's, you know, some violent outbreaks in America, which, by the way, I think, like, it'd be interesting if it, like, starts popping up. It's like, crap, if they showed up on the shores of the UK, how
right.
did this happen?
Right.
Yeah.
And it would be like, well, you know, I mean, because what happened is InGen, they were secretly getting, raptors would wait and get on board departing ships.
Right.
Which were just cargo ships. That is, yeah. I mean, that's what happened.
You almost could do this like a Walking Dead style, where you treat the dinosaurs as a dangerous plague that could destroy humanity if they all get out. And then you can bring in sort of governmental oversight. You like have a government team that wants to deal with Engine and sort of like, hey, you know, we're going to deal with dinosaurs. We're going to eradicate them. And Engine's like, no, we're going to take them back. But if you have a lot of good characters who are like the hunters and researchers, you have someone trying to find a way to, like, you know, make them docile or something like that.
Yeah, you need the charismatic characters.
If they had gotten out too, animal rights agencies would be like, they have as much a right to live as we
do. Yeah.
And so it would be more of a, like, you know, it's like, you know, they should be contained, yes, but, you know, we can't destroy them at this point.
Yeah, you could do sort of the political stuff as well. I think you could just really fun stuff without having to go super dinosaur on this.
You know how, you talk about if the canister got out, you know how in the dollhouse it was eventually revealed that there were, like, three dollhouses around the world?
Yeah,
like, what if there were other areas that are, like, you know, there's, like, there is a like, in Pakistan, there's a terrorist one that's trying to figure out how to breed them. Somebody else has it, like, you know, in the UK or Hong Kong or whatever.
Or some warlord in Africa has built his own sort of low-rent Jurassic Park.
Right. Right. They, you know, we don't have the DNA exactly right. They die in 5 days.
Right.
Until then, we can use them.
And I throw my enemies in the pits with the raptors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you could play around
it's
a lot of ideas.
Pretty dark stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it could be a lot of fun.
I actually think this is doable. It's high budget, but you're right. The movie made a god-awful amount of money.
Oh, and the show that we were thinking of is called Terra Nova.
Terra Nova, yes, that's it. All right, I'll have one more, and then we'll probably wrap for the day. We may return to this topic at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
But my notion is a Fletch.
Oh, yeah.
Not the Chevy Chase Fletch necessarily, though.
You're talking about the Gregory McDonald's.
I wanted to be more of a crime story, but
we're going to have to again explain what Fletch is.
So Fletch is a really fun 80s movie wherein Chevy Chase plays a character from a series of novels by Gregory McDonald, who is a journalist who sort of adopts disguises to do investigations and that kind of thing. And he's an investigative journalist and sort of focused on crime type stuff.
Right.
And he's an ex-military guy. He's got some skills. In the books, that played up more. In the movies,
it's a little more comedic.
It's sort of he's a charming guy who can pass for people.
Right.
He can sort of get by on disguising himself. And this is I would do a Fletch as reporter for a major newspaper in LA. I'd make it a period piece in the 80s.
Yeah, I would sure.
The 80s would be a fun time to do it.
That's Fletch 1.
Yeah.
Fletch 1 was great.
Yeah. And I would just have a series. You know, I'd have him have his supporting cast, his other reporters who work with him, and the reporter who wants his job, and his editor, and various girlfriends, and his ex-wife, and all this kind of stuff.
yes, do it serious, but if you want to bring in sort of like a castle lightness to
it. Yeah, I would do it serious, yeah, but light. Yeah. Not like grim and gritty, but not as overtly goofy as the Chevy Chase thing. Because
the Chevy Chase thing was pretty goofy. Great movie.
Mind you, if you were to do the goofy version of it, I could see that too.
Yeah.
I would do either one. It just depends on who you cast for that role. But I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Depth to adapting the books more closely seems like the way to go.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's a few of our thoughts. We have some TV pitches.
I like some of the surprises in it. Yeah, that was fun.
So we may come back to this topic again at some point. Hope you all enjoyed it. And until next time,
Yo-Jo!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.